BP puts a price tag on the spill.
And that's not all it's saying.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, July 27th. BP put out its quarterly earnings report this morning, and it is just full of news.
Also, the new financial regulations law tells whistleblowers, if you see it, say it. And Lady Gaga meets the singing nuns.
And scares them?
No, they share a creative space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but first.
BP confirmed this morning that, yes, Tony Hayward will be out as CEO in October, replaced by the American Bob Dudley. BP also put a price tag on the big oil leak, $32 billion, and said it will sell $30 billion in assets to pay for some of that. Marketplace's Stephen Beard's been leafing through the report because he's into that sort of thing. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Bill.
We've all seen how bad the Gulf Coast has it. How is BP doing?
Better than expected. I mean, if we forget for a minute the horror story in the Gulf, its underlying performance over the past quarter hasn't been that bad. The company made a profit of $5 billion, much more than the same period last year.
Well, we can't forget the spill, though, Stephen. Neither can BP. How big a hit has it been to the company's finances?
It's better than expected. I mean, as you say, the company has set aside $32 billion to cover all its costs. That includes the money it's already paid into that escrow account. And this figure actually will likely be even less for BP because it will get to set this sum against tax. So it could wind up paying around $22 billion for the spill. Still a hefty chunk of change, but much less than the $100 billion that some doomsayers were predicting. Jason Kenney of the giant Dutch bank ING says on the basis of today's numbers and announcements, BP is in fair shape.
Taken in context, it's a positive trading outlook for the company, a reinvigorated company with a new strategy, a new CEO, and the worst news now in play for the company on a financial basis.
He says BP could, in 4 or 5 years' time, regain its position as Britain's most valuable company. And he says it's very likely not a takeover target now. But all this does assume that BP's got that figure of $32 billion for the cost of the spill correct. And there isn't another major disaster somewhere else in the BP empire.
Yes. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Bill.
BP says it'll offset the amount of money it spends against its U.S. and its British tax bills. That could save it another $10 billion. Barbara Shook is Houston Bureau Chief of Energy Intelligence Group. She's with us live from Houston, Texas. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. How are you this
day? Doing well. Got to admit, part of me says, all right, they're just deducting the cost of doing business. But then the other part of me wonders, Barbara, how they can actually write this off. I mean, help me wrap my brain around this.
Well, one reason the numbers seem so large is because we've never had anything on this scale before. The total that BP's talking about is more than double the entire expenses that Exxon incurred on the Valdez spill. That was $4.3 billion over 20 years. But these expenses are legitimate operating costs, and they can be charged against the company's earnings.
Has deducting these kinds of expenses been done before?
Oh, it's done all the time. Small-scale spills happen every day. Somebody will knock over a can of lubricating oil that has to be cleaned up according to various standards, and there's an expense associated with it. That expense is part of ongoing operations, and it is deductible.
Can anyone do anything about this, about the expenses being deducted?
Well, I checked with some Senate sources this morning, and they feel like this is just really not an issue.
Not an issue. All right. Barbara Shook over at Energy Intelligence Group in Houston. Barbara, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, July 27th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. We got some fairly decent sales reports this morning from some big manufacturers, U.S. Steel, DuPont, Lockheed. Let's talk about this with financial analyst Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company. She joins us from St. Louis. Julie, you are kind of excited about these earnings reports.
Well, it is because manufacturing is having earnings, not just because they're getting lean and mean and reduce all the costs. Everybody's done that. But they have sales growth, and that's the key thing. They're actually moving the product out, and that's one of the few areas of the economy that's really moving ahead. Manufacturing depends on our trading partners and not sliding back into recession. We have to watch for any kind of weakness in Europe and Asia. Right now, our ship of state is only one sail moving us forward, and that's manufacturing. It's not the consumer.
Okay, we'll watch manufacturing. And now let's talk about the public coffers, Julie. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning state governments expect tax collections to grow for the first time in 2 years. Now, this is the big political issue, whether the feds ought to be sending money to the states. How big an economic issue is it?
Well, probably the key thing is it's coming from sales tax. We've had a little bump in retail sales here. Households have been replacing this, and this replacement cycle for the most part is over. The rest is dependent upon property tax, foreclosure still weighing on that, income tax, unemployment is still very high. So those sectors are down. The question is the Fed going to continue to give them Medicaid and stimulus subsidies? If they don't have that, that knocks more out from under their budgets. They're cutting budgets draconian. You're looking at teachers, support staff, financial aid to students, all being slashed. Prisons. They're postponing infrastructure projects except for the ones that are in the stimulus area. Hmm. And most of the states are down to constitutionally mandated services, so it's grim.
Okay. Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company with a couple things to look for. Thank you, Julie.
You bet.
So that giant financial reform law the president signed last week, will that actually solve anything? That is what regulators are asking today over at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports critics are focusing on the law's loopholes.
The financial reform bill is nearly 2,500 pages long, but Boston University economist Lawrence Kotlikoff says it doesn't really pack a punch.
We need an FDA for the financial sector. We're not getting that. This legislation gives Wall Street a license to redo what it just did to Main Street.
Kotlikoff says banks have already found major loopholes for much of the regulation, including stricter rules meant to limit banks' trading activities. And he says the reform bill left most of the actual reform up to regulators.
So we don't have the plumbing of the system yet.
Tom Higgins is chief economist at Payden and Riegel.
They've established a lot of regulatory agencies. They have these broad principles on what they'd like to accomplish with the reform. The question is how it works in practice.
Higgins says the bill is powerful and the reforms are going to transform the banking industry, but
it's probably going to take the better part of the next couple years before we know that.
Higgins says regulators need to write hundreds of rules before the process is finished. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
One part of the law getting some attention offers whistleblowers lucrative bounties for spilling the beans on wrongdoers. Reporter Janet Babin is with us this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Janet.
Hey, Steve.
So how big are these rewards?
Well, under the new law, anyone who tells the SEC about violations and they lead to the SEC collecting $1 million, that person will receive up to 30% of the amount their information brings in. So 30% of $1 million, not bad. Mm. They'll also get to remain anonymous until their cash reward's paid out to them. Stephen Crimmins is a partner with law firm K&L Gates. He represents clients in SEC enforcement investigations.
The lawyer now can tell them, look, you have an option here. You can go into the SEC. You can qualify for the tremendous bounty that Congress has said the SEC can pay. And if they're on the edge of the misconduct, the SEC will quite probably give them a cooperation agreement, which will protect them from prosecution.
So Crimmins says lower-level workers on the edge of this wrongdoing are now going to have a place to turn, and this is really going to make the SEC more effective.
And Janet, where's this big reward money going to come from?
So the SEC, they're going to pay whistleblowers out of a new stash of money called the Investor Protection Fund. And the money in that fund, Steve, is going to come from money that the SEC collects from other cases. So it's going to be self-funded.
Mm. All right. Janet Babin reporting live this morning. Janet, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, July 27th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us right here in the United States. Over the years, Chinese banks have made loans totaling more than $1 trillion to local governments throughout that country. Now, however, there is a problem. A central government audit shows 20% of that money may never be paid back. To give you an idea of how big a deal that is, if the same number of loans were bad here in the United States, it would spur another economic crisis. But China is a little different, as Marketplace's Shanghai Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
So how do Chinese banks have the money to write off all these bad loans? The truth is, they really weren't loans in the first place.
What it really is disguised government spending.
Arthur Kroeber is an economist with Dragonomics, a research consultancy in Beijing. Banks here lent a record $1.4 trillion last year, and he says that when a local government can't pay back its debt, the central government will step in and take over the repayment. Even the fact that the bad loans will total more than $200 billion isn't much of a surprise, but it is important.
So clearly the profits of banks are going to go down. They're going to come under a little bit of capital pressure. Their stock prices will fall, and they will have a little less ability to lend new money because they're sitting on these losses.
And strangely enough, that's exactly what China's government wants. It's been clamping down on lending to slow the country's growth. This should help it a little. How's that for a planned economy? In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Many people in India are still seething over a recent court ruling that some say resulted in light sentences for Union Carbide executives convicted in the 1984 gas leak in Bhopal. The accident killed as many as 15,000 people. Many Indians believe that the long-awaited punishment says less about justice than about the slow pace of India's court system. Raymond Thibodeau has our story from New Delhi.
Most Indians are used to delayed justice, thanks to a colossal backlog of cases. A Delhi High Court judge estimated it would take 466 years to catch up with the backlog in Delhi alone.
Since I am aware of the Indian judicial system, it doesn't surprise me at all. The Indian judicial system is very lethargic.
Prashant Bhushan is director for the Campaign for Judicial Accountability. He says 466 years is an exaggeration, but still it would take a few decades. He says roughly half the cases are nullified every year as citizens, flustered by long waits for their day in court, give up on their lawsuits or die.
We have a judicial system in this country that exists on paper. In practice, not even 1% of the citizens of this country can ever hope to get justice through the system.
Bhushan says one of the biggest problems is there aren't enough judges. Hiring delays have led to a 25% vacancy rate for judges. But the country's court system has improved in recent years. That's according to Nashad Ahmad Khan. He heads India's Young Lawyers Association. What does he see as the biggest advance?
Centralized computerization system. That has made the entire system more transparent.
He says a centralized database is steadily replacing India's centuries-old pen and ledger system of judicial record keeping. A new government website will eventually link the country's courts and create a database to track judgments and status of cases. Now, instead of having to go to the courts and sort through dusty stacks of ledgers, Khan can track cases from his laptop. And as a spin-off benefit of the new system, he says younger, more tech-savvy lawyers have an edge.
Young lawyers are doing better than the old lawyers. Because of the information technology, the old lawyers, they are more prone to the old system of going through the books, but we can find it within a click of the button.
Still, despite the changes, both Bhushan and Khan agree that corruption is still a persistent glitch in the system, even down to the court clerks who sometimes take bribes to misplace a file or two. They say problems like that can't be fixed by a click of the mouse. In New Delhi, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Bill Radke. Groundbreaking is scheduled this morning on one of the largest wind power farms in the world. TerraGen Power is building a wind farm in the Mojave Desert to generate power for more than 1 million people. For the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Adrian Hill has more.
TerraGen's been planning the $1.6 billion wind farm since 2005. VP Randy Hoyle says there have been regulatory and permit hurdles, and they've had to figure out how to get the power where it's needed.
A lot of the places where the wind blows, people do not live.
But new transmission lines are going up to get the electricity to Southern California homes by 2011. The project may be a bit of an outlier. A study out today from the American Wind Energy Association says investment in wind power nationally has slumped. One of the problems?
Demand.
Matthew Kaplan is with IHS Emerging Energy Research.
Power demand is down, natural gas prices are down, and power pricing is down. And that's meant that the demand for renewables is down.
Kaplan says that could change if Washington comes up with a renewable energy standard. But for now, it'll be state policy that gets turbines spinning. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Every year, thousands of young people are diagnosed with diabetes. It can be tough to motivate kids with that disease to test their blood sugar levels. It's an inconvenience and gets in the way of their lives. But there's a new device that could make testing a little more tolerable. Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll reports.
Jessie Holen is 12 years old. She has diabetes. About a dozen times a day, Jessie pricks her finger to test her blood sugar level. If it's too high or low, that can be a big health risk.
It's just hard to keep up with my testing because I like to be outside and I just forget about it sometimes because I don't want to, but I know it's something that I have to do.
To make testing more fun, the drug company Bayer is selling a new glucose meter called the Digit. It syncs with the Nintendo DS, you know, like a Game Boy. The Digit costs about $75. After Jessie tests her blood sugar level on the Digit meter, she plugs it into her Nintendo DS.
And then it's just uploading it.
She gets points every time she tests, and also for having a good blood sugar level. Those points can be used in games.
And then you just get to unlock more stuff with the more better numbers you get.
Jessie's mom, Beth, says the Digit helps keep her daughter on track.
That's a huge incentive with kids being as techno-savvy and as video game related as they are now, because it will help them want to do it, especially with the younger ones, I think.
Diabetes care is a huge market, and the Digit is just one of several products that pairs good habits with gaming. Aaron Kowalski is a scientist at the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
If we can intervene and intervene early with good tools that help improve glucose control, not only will it help the patient, but I think it'll help healthcare costs.
More people are being diagnosed with diabetes every day, especially children. If Bayer establishes a relationship with kids through the Digit device, it may have these customers for life. Les Funtleiter is a healthcare strategist at Miller Tabak.
Once people are comfortable and it's successful, they very rarely switch unless they absolutely have to. So it does become a question of customer loyalty.
If these products catch on with kids, winning that video game might mean more than a high score. It could mean a longer life. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
And finally, a group of French nuns is joining the ranks of recording artists over at Decca Records.
The convent was chosen out of 70 others from around the world. Producers say they were impressed with the nuns' skills at Gregorian chant. The nuns' new CD, to be released in November, will be recorded at the convent in France.
Now, Decca Records, Bill, is also home to Lady Gaga and Eminem.
That promises to be a fantastic holiday party.
Don't you think?
I would like to be there. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.